following is a production of Snake Tree Media. This is Urgent Frequency, the Sonic sit rep for Urgent Fury, the hottest tactical gaming community on the World Wide Web. And now, here's your host, Commander Claymore Fury.
Hoo-yah, Frequency Freaks! I'm Commander Claymore Fury, and this is Urgent Frequency for the week of Sunday, March 20th, 2011. This week, a barrage of figurative bombshells from the battlefield as controversy explodes, resulting in four clans going MIA from Urgent Fury in country. We have a full report. Plus, the off-duty gamers storm the beaches of Urgent Fury, and the only thing standing between them and you guys is a calm, cool voice of reason with a bad knee. Fettuccine, linguine, martini, bikini. This is Urgent Frequency.
Hey, this is Rigger 82.
This is Stiletto.
This is Rogue Duck.
This is Sergeant Dredd.
And this is White Falcon.
And we're the off-duty gamers, and you're listening to Urgent Frequency only on UrgentFury.com.
There was the explosion, and I remember just opening my eyes, and it got both of my legs. Had surgery after surgery, and what's going to happen next? The Wounded Warrior Project said, look, brother, everything's going to be okay. 3 months from now, 4 months from now, a year from now, you'll be fine. I don't know if I would be as well adjusted as I am now if it wasn't for them.
To learn more, call 1-877-832-6997 or visit woundedwarriorproject.org.
Recently, we all watched in collective horror as the earth shook and the waters rose in Japan. Thousands lost their lives, many thousands more are still unaccounted for, and countless remain without food, clean drinking water, or shelter in the bitter winter. Shaken by its worst disaster in recent memory, Japan is battling to restore the hope for a shocked and vulnerable population. Text Red Cross to 90999 to donate $10 to help the proud people of Japan. When every moment matters, and a hand reaches out, and a life is saved, when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there, through the American Red Cross. Use this moment to join us today by visiting redcross.org.
Soon, Oracle. Prepare to engage. Blue team, move out.
Copy. Engaging.
Move now! Gold team, hold position. Take out the truck.
Hostiles are inbound, Commander.
SOCOM 4, U.S. Navy SEALs. Available April 19th, 2011. Visit SOCOM.com for more information.
Urgent Frequency.
Dude, what am I
going to
say?
Sweet!
What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet!
What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet!
What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet!
What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet!
What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet! What about mine?
Dude,
what does mine say?
Sweet!
Commander Fury.
Well, it's certainly been busy in Urgent Fury since our last transmission. Over the course of one weekend, four clans have gone missing in action. One high-profile staff member resigns as another is relieved of duty, and several Rangers have submitted their resignations as well, with the anticipation of more fallout on the way. I wish I could explain exactly what happened, but frankly, I can't, at least not in this episode. What I do know is that amid accusations of using ringers or rent-a-players, tournament leaders IL Sept have now bowed out of the competition, just hours after Violent Revolution, Clan Uprising, and Fatal Corruption each announced that they too would be withdrawing from the festivities. But wait, there's more. One high-profile staff member resigned his position because he disagreed with Urgent Fury Command's ruling on the matter in question and allegedly threatened to release proprietary information regarding the matter, which ultimately led to the dismissal of another high-profile staff member. All of that. And then, a handful of Urgent Fury Rangers submitted their resignations as well. And while I haven't been able to contact everybody for a statement on the matter, Urgent Fury COO John Ostro did give this statement regarding the whole mess.
So it's an unfortunate situation that the tournament had to have a hiccup in it, which led to three teams leaving. And the process wasn't executed correctly for filing a complaint, which allowed us not to, as staff and directors, analyze the situation and compile enough material to make a judgment. The clans that decided that they wanted to leave had provided a strong-armed ultimatum without allowing us a chance to investigate properly. We gave a decision based on how that would affect the wars for the week, and it apparently was not good enough. They decided to exit the tournament. The staff spent a great deal of time deliberating and had decided that that's going to be the ruling. We hadn't actually decided the penalty for the offense before people decided to start throwing bricks through storefront windows. And it's always been Urgent Fury's stand that you could have appealed rather than created a slight riot within the community. And it's unfortunate that certain individuals have chosen to leave. But in the long run, when the rules are reevaluated, hopefully we will be able to avoid any additional issues with ringers and rent-a-players and clan merging. And we try not to influence how our teams recruit their individual shooters. We also stand by our decision as staff and directors. The staff has decided that that was the best course of action. And the response, unfortunately, will just have to be part of what makes Urgent Fury as a whole grow. We will miss those who put in some great time as staff and rangers and playing in the tournaments. But hopefully there will be a more interesting experience in the community from it.
So where does that leave us? Well, at press time, Urgent Fury Command has decided to suspend the tournament for 1 week while they decide on how to proceed. All I can say at this point is stay tuned.
There are times when you have so much to say, just so little time.
Excuse me, what?
Good thing there's Twitter. We got you covered with the latest and the most talked about topics, 140 characters at a time. Follow us on Twitter.
Hey guys, it's Audrey Cio from PlayStation Network's Core and FearNet.com. You are listening to Urgent Frequency on UrgentFury.com.
Commander Fury.
Oh, you men are all alike. Seven or eight quick ones and you're off with the boys to boast and brag. You better keep your mouth shut. Oh, I think I love him.
Commander Fury.
Tonight we have a very special treat for our audience. Anybody who listens to this podcast knows that we here at Urgent Fury have a great affection for the men and women who serve in our completely volunteer armed forces. And that is one of the many reasons I'm very proud to welcome our guest tonight, joining us via Skype from various locations throughout the planet, our Rigger 82, White Falcon, Sergeant Dredd, Stiletto, and Rogue Doc, just a portion of the group otherwise known as the Off-Duty Gamers. Gentlemen and lady, welcome to Urgent Frequency.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you guys decided to do this, and I do want to acknowledge, I say this every time I do an interview, I have this, I call it the butt-kissing section, and this is where I say thank you for taking time to, seriously, because I know you guys had to work the logistics out and be here, and I really, really do appreciate it, because when I first went to the Off-Duty Gamers website, I was blown away. I thought, man, this is such a great idea. So I guess let's start with that. Mark, we'll start with you. Let's talk a little bit about I understand that you have a connection with the gaming world that most people may not be aware of, but let's talk a little bit about how we got to Off-Duty Gamers.
Okay. Well, originally I had been working with paratrooper.net, which is my personal website, for over 10 years, and through that interaction with U.S. Army paratroopers mainly, I ran into EA and they're doing Medal of Honor Airborne, and this was back in 2007, and managed to get myself invited out there for the first community event. And previous to this, I'd been a PC gamer for years, so I thought, okay, this is great, I'm getting a freebie. Went out there, and during that community event, the community manager at the time looked at me and said, you know, he'd been doing his homework, and he said, hey, I would absolutely love it if we could do the training towers, you know, it'd be cool. And I said, okay, when do you want to do that? And he looked at me like I was crazy and said, could you actually make that happen? And I said, absolutely. So let me make a few phone calls. Well, flash forward to July of that year, we brought everyone out to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Let them jump off the training towers, took them around, showed them what it was like on Fort Bragg, and then they got to play the game early against the paratroopers of the 82nd Airborne. So that right there, I was like, this is the perfect storm. You know, military games are hot. The military, 90% of the military are at least sometime gamers, and there really wasn't a resource for military gamers out there. Nothing really representing them, and too many of the troops were not telling people they were in the military, because they'd go into forums and they'd mention that they were military and get some onslaught of expert 14-year-olds who played Call of Duty who wanted to contradict them all the time. So they don't announce themselves, and they don't feel comfortable enough to do that, and I really wanted to provide a space for that to happen. And over the next 2.5 years, I worked to kind of refine what I wanted to do with the site. And as of a year ago, January, we launched, and I've been very pleased with the results so far. The audience is growing. The game industry has been very, very nice to us and interested in our subject matter, our expertise.
Would you guys consider yourselves a clan or just a community or a little of both? Or
we shy away from the clan thing. We have a clan tag, the ODG, Our big thing is we let anyone who's military, anybody who wants to support the military that isn't affiliated with a clan, can wear the ODG. We just ask that you respect the military and the attitude of off-duty gamers. But we aren't a clan. We don't. We're more of a representation of military gamers in general. There are some great clans out there that do tactical type of work. But for the most part, off-duty gamers represents that gamer that doesn't have the amount of time to get into organized clans. So it's more of a haphazard, hey, we're all wearing the clan tag, we might you have the ODG on there, you might actually start to link up with somebody if you notice somebody else wearing it. So we're kind of using it as kind of a badge for military service.
Right. And in Urgent Fury, we do have a lot of active and veterans within the community. And one of the main reasons I wanted to have you guys on the show so bad, it was because I do. I just, like you said, I feel like that it surprises me when I don't see or hear a lot of talk about, because I've been playing games forever, and especially shooters, and right now the market is so flooded with shooters, it's strange that you don't run into more military people. And I play games and things happen in the game, and I just sit there and wonder, like, I wonder if this is really anywhere near the type of thing that would really happen in a combat situation, things like that. Now everybody here on this panel, you most of you guys are you're not active duty, right?
Yeah, everyone here is out, is prior service.
Angie, you are the noob. I hate to use that term, but but you have served as recently as a year or so ago.
Yeah, I am the newbie, and I'm definitely the baby of the group. I'm the youngest one. I just became a staff member last month. I was medically discharged in January of 2008. So wow. It's actually been quite a while.
Not quite a while for the rest of us.
Yeah, for the old guys. William, Rigger keeps calling you the Navy guy. Are you a doctor? Is that what it is? Or a medic?
I was a Navy corpsman stationed with the Marines, and that's their little nickname for us is Doc.
You were at Great Lakes for a while. My brother, who was in the Navy, clearly spent some time at the Great Lakes facility there.
Yeah, that's where I went to boot camp, was up in Great Lakes.
Now, is it true there's a ghost up there? Well, which I know that doesn't have anything to do with off-duty gamers, but I've always heard that there was a ghost at the Great Lakes station. Is there any truth to that whatsoever?
I've heard rumors of it, but I haven't actually seen it or heard it while I was there.
Let's talk to Sergeant Dredd. You are across the pond, sir. You, of course, served with Her Majesty's Armed Forces. What? Let's talk about that experience and how you ended up hanging out with the off-duty gamers.
Yeah, I joined the Army at 16, joined the 1st Royal Tank Regiment. Learned to drive a Chieftain tank at the age of 17, which was fun. Based in Germany, around about the same time as Brigham and Falcon, we didn't meet in Germany, but I think we were over there in Germany for about the same time, late 80s. As far as off-duty gamers, yeah. Basically, I was looking around for a decent gaming group and came across the ODG, joined the forum, and didn't know if it was a clan or not, but you could join the TeamSpeak and just basically start talking. So that's what I did, basically. And it was pretty good. You know, because it didn't take me long to get comfortable, because they're an easygoing bunch and a great bunch of guys.
And, of course, White Falcon, you and Mark served about the same time in the 82nd. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I know Mark mentioned paratroopers.net. Was that the connecting point that brought you guys together in off-duty gamers?
It was actually military.com. I made a page for my unit, and Mark was out trolling around one day and saw it and directed me over to PNet, where he was just starting things up there, and ever since then we have been running this thing together. So
let's talk about some games. What kind of games? Let's just kind of go through the panel, and you guys tell me like what kind of games you like. Mark, we'll start with you. Obviously, talk a little bit about your gaming history.
Well, it goes all the way back to the Atari 2600. That gives you an idea where my age bracket is. but you know, obviously, when that was all console in the late 70s, early 80s. And then when I got out of the service, got into computers, and I think for gaming, you did a lot of the stuff on your own, but I think it was, what, Tribes, I want to say, in 98? I think it's when the first multiplayer game, and it had a kind of a work-together component, so a first-person shooter on that level. So I pretty much got into it and addicted to it at that point. So first-person shooters are typically where I'll gravitate to. I like puzzle games, but the PC is my first love. I do some console work. But obviously military shooters are cool just because of what we do and what we are. So we enjoy that.
Stiletto, what about you? Mark affectionately referred to you as the PlayStation 3 person of the group. What kind of games got you started in the gaming world?
Well, the first system that I ever had was a Super Nintendo. When I got my PS3, I just kind of started snatching up games. I wanted to play everything. I want to say I probably log over 40 hours a week of gaming. I'm only a PS3 gamer because my computer's too slow to run anything besides Facebook and Twitter.
Welcome to my world.
And I'm big on first-person shooters and RPGs, but I'd like to say that I dabble in all different genres.
Are you a SOCOM fan at all? Or
I've actually never played SOCOM, but I'm planning on trying out SOCOM 4.
And you should is all I'm going to say. What about you, Doc? Let's talk about your gaming resume, as it were.
Well, it's like Rigger, I started back in the Atari 2600 days, so that's been a while. I guess my first introduction to first-person shooters was probably Wolfenstein 3D.
Wow.
And then after that, I took a break from gaming, and I guess the most recent, I started with SWAT 3 was where I started my online gaming. And ever since then, I just mainly play first-person shooters, mainly military first-person shooters.
Okay, what about you, Sergeant Dredd? Tell us about your, and it's this could be curious for me, because I've always wondered about the gaming culture in the States versus the UK and Japan and things like that. So what about you? What was your introduction to the world of gaming?
My introduction, ZX Spectrum 81K, 81 with a 1K chess game on a tape system. That was it. Yes, every time you wanted to restart the game, you had to load up the game on the tape.
Wow.
Unreal. Yeah. Black and white screen. I think the resolution was 80 by 60.
And what about you, White Falcon? What does your resume look like?
You know, back in the day, we used to have to go to these places called arcades, and we would put quarters into big machines. And,
I've heard of these things.
And we would play until our parents came and got us, and we were broke, one or the other. But yeah, it started way back in the 70s, and not to age myself, but not as old as Dredd. But... No, worked my way through. Started gaming with Mark after we had met, too, and that's when I really got into the online stuff because he was more cultural than I was. But we would do afternoon lunch gaming, and then I got an offer back in 2004 to get on the America's Army beta team, and have done that for since 2004. But in that, got mixed up with a bunch of other things. But really into the first-person shooter, more the military stuff. I did Legos for a while, but I got pretty boring.
Now, you guys are dating yourself. I have no problem saying that I, too, I used to play pinball machines. I used to love pinball machines when I was a kid. And do you guys remember a game called Zaxxon? Speaking of arcade.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a little space shuttle 3D kind of. Yeah, it was supposed to be 3D because they put it on an angle.
I would probably spend, if I would have had the money, I would have spent thousands of dollars in quarters playing Zaxxon and Russian Attack, which I spent a night in a Pittsburgh bus station and probably did spend about $50 in cash.
I think my abuse was on Spy Hunter.
Oh, Spy Hunter. See, that was a cool game. I'm not going to comment on the Dwayne Johnson film of the same title. But
No.
So let's talk about games right now. Of course, like I mentioned, the genre right now is just flooded. Some people are even saying that we're kind of going through a golden age because the games have developed, and which, you know, I've said this for the last couple of years, they spend as much money now making a game as they do a blockbuster film, and they do as much business. But what games out there right now really excite you, and what games, I know that one of the things that you guys like to focus on with the off-duty gamers is the authenticity. Now, Rigger, you mentioned that you had dealt with Medal of Honor Airborne, which, great game, by the way. I don't know if you had anything to do with it. it was a great game, but I know that Medal of Honor prides themselves on authenticity and realism and stuff like that. And one thing that I've always loved about the Medal of Honor franchise is the historical accuracy, not so much the technical accuracy, but you can actually learn something by playing the game. How did you feel about that game? Did you feel like that game was, did it get your stamp of approval in terms of military accuracy and things like that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And getting involved with Medal of Honor, probably one of the best things I could do in preparation for getting this off-duty gamers out is get involved with that group. They have a reverence for the military, the history, and the military as a whole, that it's not just about getting it right, it's about respecting the military. And it was that attitude that really drew me to work very closely with them. And when it came time to come back around, and off-duty gamers had just launched, and I got an opportunity to work with Medal of Honor on this latest title, it was a no-brainer. Got involved with them, and I could see they had, you know, they consulted real technical operators. They had more details than you could actually believe. It hooks into the live military, so they had it down. And no one should doubt for a second the commitment those guys have to the military community and the respect that they do. And I think that really shows up on the games. Not saying that the other ones aren't. I'm just saying that there's a certain level of concentration to it that draws me, and I think we're starting and we're seeing that it's a bleed over into DICE and now the Battlefield 3 material.
Well, and I think I really do. I think that the immersive nature of gaming, I think it's important for the authenticity to be there. Since we're talking about Medal of Honor, I know, and you guys don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but I know that Medal of Honor, they actually received some criticism because they did include, and I should say they included the word Taliban when they were talking about their enemy. And in talking with some of the people at EA, their take on it was basically, and I'm not going to quote anybody, but their take on it was, you know, we're telling a story. We're telling the soldier's story. And again, like I said, that's something that Medal of Honor has always done. Is that something that you guys think about, or is that something that you feel like that maybe that's somebody else making a stink about it?
Well, I think we'll go around the room with that one. I think it's a good one to hit. But let me just say that a lot was made of that. And the irony was that it didn't come from inside the military. It came from a KIA's mom, and she got on network news, and they just played it to death. Personally, I think it's ridiculous. Them changing the name of the game is like, I mean, if the text on the page said you're fighting against Cookie Monster, then they didn't change anything else. You're still seeing, you know, the Taliban fighters, Chechnyan. It doesn't change anything, and it also doesn't mean that the people on the other side have that ideology. It's no different than we're out in the field with the laser tag gear, and you guys are the bad guys, we're the good guys. It's all about training, and it's all about, you know, doing the job. So to me, it's just a lot of work up about nothing.
I agree with you. Let's go around the panel here. Does anybody else have any opinions on that? And if not, we can move on. But I am curious to know what the actual military community thinks about that.
I definitely agree with Rigger. There was so much controversy about it, but it was mostly from civilians. People in the military, I can say that the majority of them, it didn't bother them that it had the word Taliban in it. It could have went either way for me. I really could care less if it had the word Taliban or if it didn't. But I think all the stink that was made out of it was just, like Rigger said, ridiculous. I really thought it was pretty pointless.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I agree with them. I think the news agencies, they thrive on controversy, and that's what they put out there the most. And like they said, it's what came outside the military. It wasn't the military itself complaining about the word Taliban being in there.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's the media jump on a bandwagon, and sometimes politicians do it as well. They jump on the bandwagon, they try and get things changed for the sake of it. I mean, end of the day, it's a game.
That's exactly right. It's a game that people need to understand that when they're playing it. And a lot of the people that were throwing the biggest fit have probably never played a video game in their life. And it goes back to the whole stigmata that video games cause crime and make kids kill kids and whatnot. It's not, it wasn't to be non-sensitive to the current folks in the current theater, but it's a game. And people need to understand that. They need to get past this whole gaming causes all these issues, because it doesn't.
Well, and it goes, to me, you know, it falls in that category of, just like I said, they were trying to tell a story, and I think if you're going to tell the real story, you have to be accurate.
Fed off itself, too. The one of the things that you saw and everybody focused on was, okay, AFES, the Army and Air Force Exchange Service, they run the stores on posts. And, you know, so that was the big thing. Oh, they're pulling it off the shelves. The military doesn't sit around and go, geez, what game should be on the shelves or not. They sell things just like any other retailer to the consumers, but they just happen to be military. What you saw there was a political move when they saw the sensitivity issues going across network news. It makes people panic. And the higher echelons of the military are very political. It's very much like the elected officials. So nobody wants to get in trouble and be that one guy that didn't say anything. So everybody, they tend to sometimes overreact when in retrospect, I think they should have probably just stayed away from it and just said, hey, look, it's their personal decision whether the purchasing person wants to involve themselves in the game or take the game, and they understand fully what's in it. So I think they should have just left it up to the guys.
I mentioned that I did an interview a little while back, and one of the questions they asked me, because our focus is mainly on shooter titles and stuff, they asked me a Second Amendment question, which really freaked me out because I wasn't ready for it. But I basically told them, you know, as far like White Falcon alluded to there, in terms of trying to connect violence with video games, I sit there and say it's kind of like saying if I watch somebody eat chocolate cake, I'm going to get fatter. Clearly, I don't agree with that, and they have turned it into a hot button issue. So I appreciate you guys addressing it. But let's move on. Let's start talking about games in general. Now, you mentioned Battlefield 3. Now, I mentioned this on our last podcast. Eddie Vasconcelos told me, he said, "Man, wait until GDC. You're going to be freaked out." And I'm just like, okay, whatever. You know, you hear that all the time. Hype is part of the business. Hype is certainly part of the industry. But I got to say, when I saw the Fault Line trailer, and I know you guys actually did a review, how do you guys feel about what you've seen so far of Battlefield 3?
So far, it's amazing what they're doing with it, and I think I can speak for us all. We're really excited to see where this goes. I mean, we're pushing at DICE privately to try to bring us in earlier to help them out, but also so we can get a good look at this thing. So destruction and stuff is really exciting. I think DICE is on track to really put something amazing together this fall, and I'm just hoping that it's not going to succumb to any of the hype. Sometimes they get the hype turns into something a little bigger than the game. But so far, what we've seen, very impressed. We have been happy to break these things down, and as I say on the site, we don't do these breakdowns to to nitpick or anything like that, and it should actually be a compliment to DICE on the work that they're doing, that we can narrow it down to certain particular details that are just a little off.
Now, of course, they can visit the website to get more on it, but what is your breakdown of what you've seen so far? Militarily speaking, does it seem fairly accurate? Does it seem like that? Because, I mean, as far as the technical side of it goes, I know that they used, the first time I've heard of a hybrid type of technology where they're taking the ant technology from some of the sports titles and combining it with their very powerful Frostbite 2. I think it looks, when I first saw the, and I said this last time as well, the first time I saw the trailer, I thought it was a live action trailer. It took me a second to kind of go, oh, that's part of the game. But from a military standpoint, do you guys feel pretty confident in what you've seen? And to add to that, what are some games out there that you feel like get it right? And what are some games that you feel like they need some work in terms of their military authenticity?
Well, Angie, I think as the person who has served most recently, especially over in Iraq, I think you should maybe take point on some of the visuals and some of the things you've seen.
After watching the Battlefield 3 Faultline episodes, I was really impressed. Just the intricate details that are put into it, it's amazing. Like, I would notice the stuff like the twist of his leg while he's throwing a grenade, or, you know, pulling the charging handle, the way you reload, all that kind of stuff was incorporated into the Faultline episode, and there's really no words to describe it. It looks amazing, and I have really high hopes for it. Looking at some other military FPSs, I would have to say that some franchises like Call of Duty are a little bit extreme, like problems with the weapons being underpowered or overpowered, things like that, where it's not really true to form when you're basing it on real life experiences. But I mean, in the end, like everyone said, it's still a video game, and I mean, everyone has fun with it either way, but I think Battlefield 3 is going to be pretty amazing.
My only complaint about Call of Duty, and I, which I could go on, I could do an entire essay on my complaints about Call of Duty, but from the beginning, I think it looks pretty good. I can't remember who's talking about it before the interview, but it does have a cartoony feel to it, and it just seems like that, almost like it's I call it the Quentin Tarantino of first-person shooters, because everything just seems so over the top. Is that something that bothers you guys, or is that okay sometimes?
One thing I really want to say to this is, because I think sometimes off-duty gamers gets pigeonholed into, we're going to be the ones that are going to nitpick, we're going to pick on something because it's not authentic. We're under no circumstance do we feel that everything should be true to life, perfect, and we're going to go out for the jugular and pick on them. The ones who have said, you know, DICE, Middle of Eye, the ones that have said that they want to be authentic and they want to take that realism, well, then we're there to support that. And we're going to help them, we're going to point out the details, and we're going to hold them to that standard that they set for themselves. In the case of Call of Duty, they don't say that. They have clearly in a few places said that they have taken artistic license and kind of looked, and they did the Black Ops thing, so there really isn't a whole lot of real world documentation available to the public, so they can do a lot of that stuff. If that's the way they want to go, then we're going to try to grade things on the merits of what's there, and try to take into consideration that there are a game, and I mean, plenty of people in the military are playing Call of Duty. It's just the mindset you put yourself in and say, hey, look, I don't expect this to be real. And I just enjoy it. If you like to just mow people down, then let's go for it. So that's the thing. I just wanted to make sure that we don't get rolled into there. So I know White Falcon, you have, some thoughts on this one?
Oh, yes, definitely. If they was to make a game that was actually true to life, military type, nobody would ever play it, because most of the time you'd be sitting around smoking a cigarette, waiting for something to happen, waiting for your ride to show up, sitting true. In the motor pool because they haven't changed the oil yet in your Humvee. The realism is nice when it comes to the graphics, you know, the weapons and how they perform and what things look like. But for gameplay itself, you've got to keep it as a game. We'll take America's Army for one game that has went so much to realism that you can't even jump in the game anymore. And the game itself has become boring. It's almost too realistic that you you just can't have fun with it anymore. And you got to keep that fun factor in there, especially if you want to make a big hit like Battlefield 3 or even Call of Duty, which Call of Duty is an extremely popular game. And yeah, it may be a little bit cheesy, but it's fun to play.
One thing that I guess it's because I've been in radio and stuff like that. One thing that I enjoy is the battle chatter. I've noticed that over the last 5-10 years, the battle chatter has become such that it almost sounds, again, I can't speak because I've never been in the military, but I do come from a military family, and it seems like that the battle chatter, that's one thing I have so much fun with. I don't know why, but would you guys agree that the battle chatter, at least, has become more authentic in today's first-person shooters?
Yes.
I would say yes.
Yes. However, most soldiers, Marines, are not that foul-mouthed that some of the games have. There are a few guys that way, but some of the language gets a little bit carried away, and it portrays a soldier or a Marine as what they're really not.
I have to be careful about the... I noticed this. I don't know if anyone, if you guys have seen the some of the Codemasters stuff for Red River that's coming. Very stereotype. I'm a little bit wary of where that's going to go, and I hope it doesn't get too deep into it, because they get that we're working with the Army and let's go ahead and make him Southern and big huge accent on him and foul mouth, every other word is the F word. The real military is a very professional force, and sure, just like anybody, you get into a room full of, and you're relaxing, it can get a little bit raucous. But you know what? These guys are, the military is a very professional volunteer group, and they deserve a lot more credit than I think sometimes are extended. And sometimes the stereotypes come in a little heavy, and it does wear on the military. And I have heard that. So it's something we watch out for.
You mentioned Red River. Now, that is a title that, look, I tried to play that game, and I ended up to the point, I swear I had to seek therapy because I was ready to open a vein midway through the game. Is that something that...
you mean Dragon Rising?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. But that was the prequel or the game that preceded right. Red River. And again, while I was really impressed with some of the squad tactics and things like that, because I'm really into that, you know, squad-based tactics, team-based tactical and things like that. But I got to say, there were times, I totally believe in if you get shot, you should die, or you should at least be incapacitated in some way. But that was just, it was to the point of where I just couldn't even, I literally didn't make it through the game because I couldn't make it through the game. Is that something that you guys look at when you look at games? Do you look at, things like hit detection, blood, gore, all of that stuff? Or is it just the complete package? Are you guys just like every other gamer out there? You just look at the fun factor.
You know what? The bottom line is it's got to be fun to play. When the details are there, we're going to look at them, and I think there's some details you never want to see in the game. People who've been in combat, they don't glorify that. They'd much rather have always said, "Gee, I didn't go anywhere. I did my training. I did my time, and came home." And those guys, what they do on the battlefield and some of the things that they see is not really for glorification. So I think we are gamers first and foremost, and I think the attitude is always, do we have fun doing it? We've all been in the military, so we know the ups and downs and what's fun and what's not. So we enjoy the premise, but the game has to come first, and you have to be able to just kind of get into it and enjoy yourself.
What about Homefront? Now, this is a game that we've been looking at. We're actually going to do a feature on it for our fourth episode over in PlayStation Home. What do you guys think about that game? Because politically, that game kind of freaks me out a little bit, because politically, that game is not impossible. The scenario in that game is not impossible. Is that something that you guys, anybody here, have you got to play the game, first of all?
Yeah, I got to play the game couple days before it came out, so we wrote the review. The story is amazing. The level of detail and the writing, the storyline, very plausible future. Hopefully that's not the case, but did an incredible job of the story. And I think it's just the game execution didn't come off the way I'd hoped. I think they got caught up too much in trying to make an excellent story and just couldn't support the game to the level I think that all the hype and PR had taken it to. And I think maybe that might have been some of its downfall, is that people expected a lot more out of that game because of what they were seeing and because of the PR marketing.
I think the problem with that game too, and I said this about Medal of Honor, I thought it was a great campaign. I'm not crazy about it online, but I thought the story and the single player mode, I thought it was a great campaign, but it was just too short. And I had the same complaint about Homefront. I just felt like it was a little bit too short. Of course, for Homefront, the guy who did Red Dawn, and if I'm not mistaken, I think he even helped write Apocalypse Now. I could be wrong about that, but I know that he helped flesh out the story for Homefront. And there were a couple of moments in that game where, and if you played it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There's a few moments in that game where it's kind of breathtaking, and it's kind of like, wow, I didn't see that coming. But I agree with you. The gameplay does kind of fall short. But if you want to buy a game that where you just want to see a really interesting story and be part of a really interesting story, I think Homefront would be a good buy. What other games are you guys really grooving on right now that you like and that you might want to talk about right now?
Well, I think we will all say, for the most part, we abuse Battlefield Bad Company 2 right now on a regular basis.
Definitely.
I think, yeah. Go ahead. I think Dredd and Falcon, you guys will probably be the best at chatter about BFPC2.
Yeah. Yeah, we love Battlefield Bad Company 2. It's a really fun game, especially the newer maps being so large. That makes it more fun. What do you think, Falcon?
Oh yeah, the new map Heavy Metal is a really good time, and we really don't want Mark to know this, but Dredd and I do use the ODG as a clan when we're playing Battlefield Bad Company 2. So
when you guys set up for especially the way Battlefield is set up, their format is such that you can actually pick kits and things like that. How do you guys go into that? I mean, because again, Urgent Fury is a really big, obviously an online-based community. What are some of the, are there strategies or certain things that you guys would recommend to folks out there that are maybe playing Battlefield Bad Company 2 and maybe in the future Battlefield 3? When you set up your team, what do you have some tips and tricks that might help the folks out?
Oh, I do. I think that the people on the opposite team of me should not move and stand still so I can hit them every time.
I like the way you think, sir.
One of the things that we really have leaned into, we use TeamSpeak, and I think it's been something that hasn't really been pushed in games. The in-game chats usually don't work very well, and they're able to be heard across maybe people that shouldn't be. So they I think more should be done with that. Especially on the console side, but we use TeamSpeak heavily. And one of the things that I notice that we do, and some of the more tactical players, is we'll come in, and if say I know Dredd and Falcon are playing, and Doc's been on this, you come in, and the first thing you ask is, "What role are you guys?" Because what we'll try to do is, even if it's not our favorite role, we'll compliment the group. There's a lot of times when White Falcon is sniping, and so Dredd's doing the engineering, so I'll come in as a medic. It's because the roles, and this is something that we really appreciate in these games and that we hope that we're going to see more of in Battlefield 3, those roles complementing each other. If you can get all of the players synced up and in those roles, you can do really well. Even if, like I said, even if it's not your most favorite, you get all these guys that you have a whole crew of snipers. But they go down and get respawned. And if they had a medic on staff, they'd be even more unstoppable. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that we do as a group. I dare I say team or clan. That we do. Yeah, I know. I'll use the word, the dirty word. I still want to say if we get rid of clan, we go to unit. It makes me feel better.
In terms of preparation, which anybody that's been in the military knows that the first 5 seconds of any kind of combat operation, the plan, and I'm doing the quotation marks, the plan goes out the window. But preparation, do you guys practice a lot in terms of just, getting together, scrimmaging, talking about things? Or is it just pretty much on the fly, you kind of know what you're going to do? Or what's the process for when you guys actually get into competitive gaming?
Most of us haven't done anything organized. It's usually, and that's kind of why it's called Off-Duty Gamers. We kind of just, as we get out of work, work and come home. So we, I think, what, between 7 and 9 Central is pretty much the hot spot for us on the weekdays. But we'll hop in and just start playing. But it's a very different dynamic. It's actually difficult to play against a team on the other side. When you play against a team that's coordinated, you can plan and you can anticipate certain things are going to happen. One of the toughest things about online games where you're playing with the public who isn't trained and don't really have that cohesiveness is you're playing against pretty much organized chaos. They run in different directions. You got one guy who's grabbing a chopper and he's going to down it because he's just using it as a way to get from point A to point B faster so he can get into his sniping position. It is almost impossible to try to anticipate anything and try to mount some kind of counter. So you're always reacting, and I think games in this vein are a lot different in that respect. So we do a lot of on the fly. We get in and it's just you react to whatever's going on in the battle space. And the thing that we try to do is just try to maintain our roles and then work together to point things out and keep each other updated.
Before we got into the interview, you talked a little bit about some of the charity things that you guys are trying to coordinate. Let's talk about that for a second, because I do. I really believe not only does Urgent Fury support the military, but I support the military, men and women, past and present. I don't take them for granted. I do not take what they do lightly. So I know that's something that's very near and dear to this group here. What exactly are you guys trying to do in terms of charity events and things like that?
Well, and that's the newest piece of the puzzle, and we're trying to create an audience and, in order to grow and get that kind of donation. But our biggest thing right now is to create a bridge between the companies that are trying to get those materials to the troops because they want to support but don't know how. So we're trying to work with that. There's a couple of great organizations out there already doing things that we're trying to bridge with, the Wounded Warriors, Soldiers Angels. So we're working at this point with those, but one of the things we really want to do is honor the military and really thank them for the work that they do by telling them, you know, there's not too much we can do besides the thank you and an attaboy. And if we can do it with putting a game in a gamer's hand, taking them out of reality for a little bit so they can relax, then that's our focus. And we'll be working hard, and we're looking for sponsors and interested people to help us out with it. We're a young site and growing rapidly, and I think things will come along.
You know, I certainly want to say that anything that we can do to help off-duty gamers and help you guys support your cause, we'll be completely open to that. So stay in touch with us as far as that goes. If folks want to network with you, how do they do that? I know that you guys are on Twitter. Tell everybody at home how they can get in touch with or follow or just network with the off-duty gamers.
Yeah, obviously, offdutygamers.com. We're on Twitter at offdutygamers. You can go to our forum. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/offdutygamers. You're starting to see a theme there, aren't you? we're pretty much in every social networking piece, and you can find us always. If anyone wants to contact, you can go to the website and hit the contact us, fill out the form. It's going to come right to my desk. So we're happy to work with everybody. We hope to reach out, and we definitely want to thank all the military who are out there serving. You guys are appreciated every day. And that is our drive, and our focus is to make sure that the military community is taken care of and respected.
Sergeant Dredd, I have one more question, and then I'm going to let you guys go here in a second. Do you like PG Tips tea?
Yes, it's very nice. My dad used to drive the chimps around. You know, they used to do the adverts for the chimps. They used to drive them around in, that must have been in the 60s.
Wow, and they now have sock monkeys, right?
Sock puppet, yeah. The sock puppet, yeah.
I told you that our host Jack Delhouse is from Southampton, and he continually tells me I have to try some PG Tips because I'm a
team. Oh, seriously, it is a good. They blend it. They actually blend the leaves so they can work. But pretty much the tea should work in any country.
I had a questionnaire, and I was going to do the Pavo questionnaire that you see on Inside the Actor Studio, but there's five of you, and it would take us 4 hours to do it. So, Rigger 82, Sergeant Dredd, Stiletto, White Falcon, and, of course, Rogue Doc. Thank you, the off-duty gamers. Please go visit them. And, ladies and gentlemen, I certainly appreciate you, and you have my salute. Thank you for everything that you do, and thank you for bringing to light the men and women who serve this country. It really means a lot to me, and thank you for being my guest today.
Thanks for having us.
And don't forget, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, you can send them to me, Commander Fury, at Commander Fury at urgentfury.com. urgentfury.com. You can network with us via Twitter, Facebook, the official Urgent Fury blog, Urgent Fury Unleashed, and of course on our brand new YouTube channel, UFreak TV. Urgent Frequency is produced by Urgent Fury Holdings, and right here in the studio by Allison Armstrong, with a special thanks this week, of course, to the off-duty gamers. That just about does it for this episode. You know the drill, kids. Keep your feet wet and your powder dry. Hoo-yah!
That loud-ass son of a bitch.